Have you ever heard the wind go, "Tis a pitiful sound to hear. It seems to chill you through and through with a strange and speechless fear. 'Tis the voice of the night that broods outside when folks should be asleep. And many and many's the time I've cried to the darkness brooding far and wide over the land and the deep. Whom do you want, O lonely night, that you wail the long hours through? And the night would say, in its ghostly way, you. My mother told me long ago, when I was a little lad, that when the night went wailing so, somebody had been bad. And then, when I was snug in bed, whither I had been sent, with the blankets pulled up round my head, I'd think of what my mother'd said, and wonder what boy she meant. And who's been bad today, I'd ask, of the wind that hoarsely blew. And the voice would say, in its meaningful way, you. That this was true, I must allow. You'll not believe it, though. Yes, though, I'm quite a model now. I was not always so. And if you doubt what things I say, suppose you take the test. Suppose when you've been bad some day, and up to bed are sent away from mother and the rest, suppose you ask, who has been bad? And then you'll hear what's true, for the wind will moan in its ruefulest tone, you. Hello, all you boos and ghouls and every soul in between. Welcome back to another haunting episode of October State of Mind, the podcast that transports you to spooky season, no matter when you're listening. No matter what month it is before you put those headphones on, it's always October in here. Although now, it is officially September in the real world, and for many of us hardcore Halloween lovers, that means it's already the start of spooky season. So you don't even need to be listening to this episode today in order to get those fall feels. But I'm glad you are. I'm your host, your, dare I say it again, ghost host, Ricky Schroeder. Rick or treat, if you're nasty. Yes, this is the third episode. We've made awesome podcast into a trilogy, but I don't plan on stopping there. Just like Lord of the Rings, I plan on doing at least three more that aren't as good as the original three, but still fun. Just kidding, we're only going to continue to go up from here. For any of you newbies here on October State of Mind, we've got creepy news, scary movies, people's true ghostly and creepy experiences, everything blood-curdling to get you in the spooky spirit all year long. When I just said, any of you newbies, I was going to try and make a ghost pun, and I was about to say, for any of you, boo, but I course corrected there. But if I hadn't course corrected, so what, who cares? So what, who cares? There are no rules here on October State of Mind. We're not like a regular podcast, we're a cool podcast. You know, I realize that I say we a lot in reference to this podcast, on my social media posts and the like, as if there's more than only me doing this, like I've got coworkers and writers and pitch meetings and sponsors, none of which I have. It's all me, folks, recording in a closet that I'm imagining is a recording studio. So I don't know why I use we. Perhaps I use it like the royal we, like the way the queen addresses herself. Anyway, Like I said, it's officially September and the beginning of spooky season for all of us Halloween lovers. Some may even argue that spooky season begins as soon as the pumpkin spice latte is released late August. Naysayers, boo, would say it doesn't start until October. But I say don't let anyone tell you when you can celebrate your favorite time of year, people. If it brings you joy, let it bring you joy. Also, speaking of the pumpkin spice latte, I gotta say, now, this may be controversial, and I may lose a few listeners here, but I'm not a fan. Sorry. Every year, I try it, because I think maybe my tastes have changed, or I didn't give it a fair shot before, and every year, I still don't like it. It honestly, it brings me great shame, like, imposter syndrome rears its ugly head. How can I claim to love Halloween and autumn so much if I don't like pumpkin spice lattes? It feels blasphemous. I haven't had my yearly attempt yet this year, though, so I'll let you know if my tastes have magically changed this year. Although I must say, I do really enjoy other pumpkin-flavored things, like pumpkin pie and pumpkin spiced breads and pumpkin donuts. Oh, pumpkin cider. Oh my God, it's so good. There's this orchard in the Hudson Valley. It's not a far drive from New York City. It's called the Warwick Valley Winery. And in addition to wine, they also make and sell ciders. It's Doc's Ciders. You can go there and do tastings and buy a bunch of cider. It's probably a good COVID activity because there's so much outdoor space they have there, and they occasionally have like live music outside. Anyway, a couple years ago, I went there for the first time and I did a tasting and I tried their pumpkin cider. I was hesitant with my history of, you know, not liking pumpkin drinks, but I tried it and I so loved it. It's a little desserty, but it's got a beautiful pumpkin flavor with notes of cinnamon and nutmeg and ginger and, I don't know, some other great spices that, just gives you that perfect crisp fall buzz. Oh, it's alcoholic, by the way, so sorry, kids. I stocked up last year, and I've still got some in my fridge. It's good for about a year, I think, so I gotta get back to the city and drink it before it goes to waste. If you go visit Warwick Valley Winery and purchase any ciders, at checkout, tell them Rick or Treat sent you from October State of Mind, and they'll have no idea what you're talking about and charge you full price. Other than being super excited about fall and ciders, I don't really have anything else to report personally. I didn't really mean to talk about cider today, but actually after listening to my first two episodes, I was thinking I wish I had a way to bring the autumn part of October a little more into the podcast, in addition to everything spooky. And it looks like that kind of solved itself for today, so cool. Today's poem, by the way, was The Night Wind by Eugene Field. I'm loving finding poems, and a little reminder, if you have a short spooky or autumn-themed poem you want to send me to read, please send it to rickyosom@gmail.com. That, in addition to any creepy or scary true stories that you want to share with me. And now, without any further delay, on to the spooky business, as we start off with a story from Britters in California. Bottom of the stairs. This happened about 4 years ago. I live in a resort community and started working for a local real estate agent, taking photos of homes for sale. I usually photographed 3 to 4 homes a week, lakefronts and shacks alike. I had seen unusual things like the occasional hidden room or unique art collection left behind, but I had never encountered anything scary until this happened. It was a summer day, warm and bright. I knew the neighborhood I was heading to, and I had no concerns about safety. The area was very suburban for the mountain, with a large park and school nearby. I packed up my camera and drove 20 minutes to the home. Upon arrival, I began my session by taking pictures of the exterior. Nothing was out of the ordinary. After struggling to navigate the sharp slope the home was on, I managed to snap its sides and rear deck. It was time now for interior shots. I proceeded to the front entered the lockbox code and tried to unlock the front door. As I fumbled with it, I felt overwhelmingly uncomfortable. Something washed over me in that moment, and I knew I shouldn't be there. Finally, I opened the door and found a house completely destroyed. The living room was a sea of debris. An EMT board laid in the middle, with a charred doll beside it. Holes littered the walls. Light bulbs were smashed all over. It was a scene straight out of a horror movie. I observed all of this without taking a single step further. I immediately closed the door, walked to my car as fast as I could, and called the agent. I told the agent that she would need to find someone else to take pictures of this house. She asked why, and as I tried to explain it to her, I realized I sounded a little crazy. How can you professionally describe to someone the feeling of being scared out of your wits for no apparent reason other than a disgustingly filthy house? She told me she had seen homes that were less than welcoming, but we both had a job to do, and she couldn't complete hers without me doing mine. I left the property, but decided I didn't want to lose my job over this, so I called my father, who lived locally, and asked if he'd accompany me to the house. In all my days, I'd never heard my dad discuss anything even remotely spooky. He's a very no-nonsense kind of man, and simply wouldn't tolerate talk of ghosts or witches. Therefore, I thought he'd be perfect for this assignment. He'd keep my head in the game for sure. I arranged to pick him up at his house in 30 minutes. My heart sank a little as I pulled up to my parents' house, and my dad's truck was gone. My mom came running out, purse in hand, to tell me that my father had to leave for work reasons, but that she'd go with me instead. She brought along a flashlight and assured me that I'd be just fine. As we drove to the house, I described to her what had happened. Her cheeriness level came down a few notches, and I could tell she was slightly unnerved. We parked in front of the house, and I knew she didn't want to go inside. I didn't want her to go inside either. She came up with a solution. She'd call my cell phone and talk to me as I walked through the house. She'd stand right outside the front door. I thought that sounded great. I answered her call, turned on my flashlight, and headed in. Again, immediately upon entering, I was scared. And just for clarification here, I am not easily scared. I am not one to see or feel things of that nature, ever. So the fact that I was actually feeling something terrified me. By this time, it was later in the day, and the house was positioned in such a way that it was completely shaded from the sun. The electricity was off, and it was dark. Very dark. My mother was on the phone telling me to breathe. I can't hear you breathing. Are you that scared? Is it that bad? I had a hard time speaking as I took in all that I saw. The toilets were completely black on the inside. The kitchen had blackish, reddish smears all over the counters. Children's toys were mixed in with porn magazines lying on the floor. I just kept clicking, trying not to focus on any one of the deeply disturbing things inside this house. I went as quickly as I could through the main level. I then came to a set of stairs leading down. I told my mother through the cell phone that I was heading down. She continued to reassure me and told me to hurry up and get it over with. I began walking extremely cautiously down the steps, one at a time. The steps led to a landing and then turned the corner, so all I could see was a white wall at the bottom. I had this immense feeling that I was going to see something horrific once I turned that corner. I was two or three steps away from the landing when I heard it. Coming from my phone, like someone was being murdered on the other end of the line. My mom. I have never ran, nor have I since, as fast as I did running up those stairs. I completely expected to find my mom laying lifeless just outside the house. I got to the top of the stairs, and there she was, standing there, looking completely terrified and perplexed. I grabbed her hand and we ran to the car. We drove for nearly 5 minutes before one of us said anything. Then she turned to me and said, "Tell me why you were screaming." I told her that I thought it was her. Neither of us were screaming, but both of us, for certain, heard a woman screaming for her life on the phone. We stopped at a grocery store parking lot and just sat there, trying to catch our breath. When I got home, I uploaded the pictures without actually looking at them and sent them to the real estate agent. I told her she'd have to do editing on her own, as I would not have them on my computer. I then deleted the email and every single image. Because of that, I don't know the address of the house, nor have I driven by it since. In hindsight, I would have liked to research the history of the property. I'll never know what happened there. So just recently, I started watching two shows at once, Upload and The Good Place. Both shows that I've been meaning to watch, and I just happened to start watching them at the same time, not realizing until afterwards, oh, I decided to start watching two shows where the basic premise is life after death. The Good Place, a comedy I'm really enjoying about where you go when you die and what happens there, and Upload, which is more of a dramedy, which takes the sci-fi route of being able to upload your consciousness to a virtual world to live indefinitely once your body is about to expire. Nothing particularly spooky about these shows. I'm enjoying them both very much so far. But it does, of course, get you thinking about life after death, which is what the whole concept of ghosts and the paranormal is all about. I'm loving these worlds that they've created on both shows. Maybe in the afterlife there is a lot of frozen yogurt, or the ability to fly, or change the view outside your window to spring or winter or autumn at your command. I mean, obviously we're choosing autumn, people. However, surprisingly, things may not be as they're depicted on TV. Imagine that. One of the least understood medical phenomenons are near-death experiences, or reviving people after they've technically been dead. Just recently, two separate stories came out about two men who had near-death experiences. A man named Peter drowned, leaving him technically dead for a few minutes before being revived. And another man, Robert, suffered a critical heart attack that clinically killed him briefly before he was revived, but then he was left in a coma for 3 days. Both men describe bizarre and creepy visions from their brushes with death. Peter describes seeing more dark than light, but vividly remembers seeing a lady with light brown hair, but no face, wearing a dark robe. He says the robe was dark, but somehow without color. It wasn't black either, it was just dark. He says, "Imagine a black hole, or a void wrapped around you like a blanket. That is what it was like. Robert described entering a gray afterlife. His experience also with faceless people in robes, except he claims he saw a canyon full of them. He remembers being in a vast field with gray tents spread everywhere. There were faceless figures, men in white robes on either side of the canyon, and as he walked away through it, the last thing I remember, he says, was all of them pointing to me. Then the world was swallowed by gray. He says he still sees these white-robed, faceless figures in his dreams. Now, some researchers and experts claim that these visions are hallucinations, and they're completely normal and not paranormal when going through a traumatic near-death experience, that it's most likely the brain scanning itself as a survival technique. Dr. Sam Parnia, director of critical care and resuscitation research at NYU Langone School of Medicine in New York City, says, "People describe a sensation of a bright, warm, welcoming light that draws people towards it. They describe a sensation of experiencing their deceased relatives almost as if they have come to welcome them. They often say that they didn't want to come back in many cases. It is so comfortable, and it's like a magnet that draws them." A lot of people describe a sensation of separating from themselves and watching doctors and nurses working on them. Neuroscientist Christoph Koch, president and chief scientist of the Allen Institute for Brain Science, agrees and says, "I accept the reality of these intensely felt experiences. They are as authentic as any other subjective feeling or perception. As a scientist, however, I operate under the hypothesis that all our thoughts, memories, precepts, and experiences are an ineluctable consequence of the natural causal powers of our brain rather than any supernatural ones." I don't know. Robert and Peter didn't describe warm feelings and a light beckoning them and family members welcoming them. They didn't see doctors and nurses working on them. What they saw seemed much, well, less welcoming. I think we as rational human beings, and especially scientists, have a need to give a rationale to everything, but why are these two different men both experiencing the same faceless, robed figures? The grayness, the lack of color. I don't know, I'll take the Good Places version of the afterlife, please. You know, this kind of shared paranormal, kind of medical experience reminds me of sleep paralysis. There's a documentary I watched about it, which terrified me. Like, one of the scariest movies I've ever seen. A documentary. But I'll save the sleep paralysis discussion for a later day. Just a little tease for you there. But for now, I'll give you another story. This one is a great one that is a great example of a creepy story, but it doesn't have to do with ghosts. Remember, always send your ghost stories. But don't be shy to send any other kind of creepy stories too. This story is from Katie in Oklahoma. Bigfoot. I have a lot of ghost encounters, but I think I'll share a Bigfoot story. I grew up on a farm in southeastern Oklahoma. I'm a bookworm, and the outdoors were never really my thing. Occasionally, Mom would run me out of the house to play in the woods or fields, but I always felt watched, which scared me. I moved away as soon as I was able, but I still visit from time to time. Last year, I was home for a visit and had to stay alone overnight. Now, I'm a grown woman, but I am still scared of those woods. I didn't get the greatest night's sleep, and I got up early to leave for work. I walked outside to feed the cats, when all of a sudden, I heard this loud knocking sound. It came from across the field, north of the house. I paused, listening, confused for a moment, then kept going about my business. About 30 seconds later, I hear it again. I stopped dead in my tracks and looked towards the sound, but I saw nothing except dark woods. I eased backwards towards the house and quickly gathered my things to leave. I felt really uneasy, and that feeling of being watched was strong. I got in my car and drove down our long and winding driveway. At the cattle guard that's at the end of our driveway is a gate we lock to keep people out, but it's also where the knocking sound was coming from. And in order to leave, I needed to get out of my car in order to unlock the gate. So I get there, put the car in park, and psych myself up to get out and unlock it. As I tepidly walk up to the gate, I suddenly hear rustling in the woods behind me. I refuse to look and scramble to enter the code so the gate will unlock. Then I smelled something terrible, like body odor, skunk, and wet dog. I pushed the gate and ran for my car. I didn't look back or relock the gate. I just took off. Weeks later, I was home again and found large footprints. My tribe believes in Sasquatch, and I know that's what was in the woods watching me. So I almost feel like so far this podcast has been partly a Halloween slash COVID update podcast. I didn't mean for that to happen, but I think so much of what has gotten me through the past 6 months of this pandemic has been the hope that Halloween happenings would be, well, happening. Back in March, I thought, oh, thank God this is happening now instead of Halloween season. I don't mind staying in now so we can be fine by Halloween. Oh, how foolish I was. Remember when we all thought this was just going to be like a month tops? Anyway, the good news is that, as I've made it clear in each episode so far, Halloween is most definitely not canceled. And there are still events that are happening. Now that it's September, it's becoming more clear what's on and what's off. In my first episode, I talked about a few drive-through haunts that were popping up. But now, it seems more and more haunts and Halloween attractions are making it work. I came across a really useful website, thescarefactor.com, that has compiled a pretty extensive list of haunts by state, and which ones are closed, which ones are pushing forward, and which ones' fates are still up in the air. First of all, looking through this list makes you realize just how many haunts there are in this country. And while the list is extensive, I'm sure it's not even 100% complete. So there's probably even more. New York alone has 107 haunts listed, 21 of which are confirmed as opening, 13 confirmed closed, and 107 as of yet unclear. Halloween is big business. Now, of course, each state has their own set of COVID guidelines, which is weird. I mean, shouldn't we all be doing the same thing? Anyway, so some of the haunts come with more risk than others. If you're planning on partaking haunts this year, I would do your research on your local haunts to see if they're following guidelines that you feel comfortable with. For me, personally, I probably wouldn't feel comfortable going to any indoor attractions this year. But anything outside sounds great. A couple more of these haunts that are opening up for the season include the exciting Stranger Things Drive Into experience in LA. And you know, it's like the real deal because it's Stranger Things with artwork of the actual show. It's not called like Strange Things or Weirder Things or, you know, something to get around the copyright infringement. The description on the website is as follows. Attention all Stranger Things fans. It's time to travel back in time to 1985 and become a Hawkins resident in real life. Adventure calls, so gather your friends and drive to the Starcourt Mall. Immerse yourself in the thrilling world of Stranger Things, where you will take part in a drive-into experience like no other. You will unlock the untold story of Hawkins in this unique format event, all from the safety of your car. In a central downtown Los Angeles location, you'll dive into and explore a living, breathing story to savor some of the best moments from the Netflix series and maybe even witness some unforeseen and unusual occurrences. It says you will drive your car through immersive environments and park as scenes play out. You'll stay in your car the entire time and masks are required if you need to leave your vehicle. Another new 2020 haunt is Cryptid Trails in Columbia, Tennessee. Tennessee. It's a new outdoor walking trail designed to play on your worst phobias, fears, and nightmares. Now, I brought this one up mostly because I wanted to read aloud the legend behind the story of their trail. And I have to do it in character because, well, you'll see. Are you ready for it? Here's the legend for the new Cryptid Trails in Tennessee, I guess. No one knows the real story no more. See, there is a place in the woods that is no longer talked about. But not because we're afraid. No. Because it's a place that we were supposed to have forgotten about. This is a story I hope you have never had the unpleasantness of hearing. Though it's said to have started with a feud, if you'll believe, between natives and them witches. The story goes that them three witches from elsewhere were planning something for the tribe. Something bigger than us. They stalked them native hunting grounds, and with dark magic, they must have cast a spell over their land. Every animal eroded to the bone and the plants all quickly rotted away. Days of starvation turned into weeks, and with each passing moon, the famished tribe divulged into a sort of madness. That's when it happened. The three witch sisters' last act was upon them, and they called upon an ancient evil to enact their final machination. The smell of something cooking. The sweet aroma of meat. Because it said a violent change befell the native tribe, and their hunger collapsed into them a primordial goal to consume. Those three witch sisters from elsewhere watched with glee upon the hill as their curse took hold, and with splendor they did wait for their one true god to appear in the carnage below. And the rest is history. Now see, when I moved onto this land with my brother, I figured the story was just a legend. But even legends are born from some truths. And now that y'all know the story, y'all must know them truths. Them witches are real. Their god is here. You have heard it now, haven't you? You hear it. Deep in the woods, that old god beckons you. So why don't you answer it? We have done our part, and now it's time to do yours. Now remember, that is fiction and a character-driven story. Maybe a little problematic. I actually edited it a little bit. You can read it, the full legend, on their website, but it felt just a little problematic with some of the native stuff. But it's worth saying that the witches were the ones that caused the carnage, not the natives. But regardless, I really do appreciate when a haunt actually gives itself some backstory, a through line, and a legend to follow, as opposed to just, here's a bunch of random scary stuff that don't have anything to do with one another, which is also fun, but the extra effort of creating a story makes a difference. Cryptid Trails also has COVID procedures, taking temperatures and social distancing while also recommending masks, but I notice they're not requiring them. And also says, while the scare actors will not touch you, they may inadvertently brush against you because of the close proximity, which in 2020 is a deal breaker for me. I personally need masks required and enough room to know that I'll be able to properly social distance at all times. But that's what I mean about doing your research about anything you're looking to do this Halloween season. Pretty much everything we do besides, you know, just staying home comes with some amount of calculated risk. And it could be a less than 1% risk, or it could be higher, but everything we do comes with at least a tiny amount of risk. And it's up to us to decide what we think is best and safest for us and the people that we will come in contact with. Now, haunts are not the only thing that are planning on opening this Halloween season. The annual Jack-O-Lantern Blaze at Van Cortlandt Manor near Sleepy Hollow, New York, is planning on opening this year. They even have an additional location on Long Island for the first time. If you've never been before, it's a truly magical display of Halloween joy. From the Historic Hudson Valley website, it says, "Meander through an 18th century landscape and discover a breathtaking display of more than 7,000 illuminated jack-o'-lanterns, all designed and hand-carved on site by our team of artisans. New for 2020, a fire truck making a special rescue, and witches stirring up a spell. Tour the Museum of Pumpkin Art, where classic paintings get the gourd treatment. See who let the pumpkin dogs out. Listen for the headless horseman, and watch out for swooping jack-o'-lantern bats. See the pumpkin carousel twirl and the pumpkin windmill whirl, and step inside the pumpkin planetarium for a star show like you've never seen. You'll certainly hold a torch for the 25-foot-tall jack-o'-lantern Statue of Liberty and get personal with Instagrammable signs of the Zodiac. Complete with synchronized lighting and an original soundtrack, this one-of-a-kind event is not to be missed." So I've been going to this event for the past few years, and I love it. And I was so happy to get the notice that they are opening this year. Now, I was certainly hesitant to want to go because in the past, it usually ends up as being hundreds of people who end up shuffling closely behind one another and bottlenecking in certain areas. But I emailed them about what they were planning on doing for COVID measures, and their response was, "The experience is entirely outdoors and touch-free. A couple of the installations have walls and a ceiling, but you can walk around them instead of through them. We have substantially reduced our capacity by 66% to ensure visitors can adhere to proper social distancing. We are asking people to remain 6 feet apart from other parties and have designated markers on the path to help with this. Tickets must be purchased in advance and are for timed admission, providing further capacity control. We require all visitors older than 2 and staff to wear a mask. No food and beverage will be sold or allowed on site. Social distance ambassadors from our staff will ensure smooth operations throughout the experience. We are operating in strict compliance with New York State-issued low-risk outdoor arts and entertainment guidelines." And that gave me enough confidence to purchase some tickets for October. They're requiring masks, and the fact that they're hiring social distance ambassadors instead of just relying on people to police their own social distancing helps put my mind at ease. I don't trust people to police themselves. It sucks I won't be able to enjoy my yearly cider as I walk through the pumpkins, but that's a small price to pay. They also have a really lenient refund policy, which is great because I plan on keeping an eye on social media when they start the event later this month, and in case it ends up looking like more of a social distance snafu than anticipated, I may forego it this year. Historic Hudson Valley is also opening their Home of the Legend attraction this year, where you can take a spooky tour on the grounds of Washington Irving's estate and go on a literature-themed scavenger hunt. A special exhibit highlights how the legend of Sleepy Hollow has lived in the imagination of popular culture through the centuries since its publication. Unfortunately, their annual Horseman's Hollow event this year was canceled, which I was disappointed and surprised by. I had hope for it being open because it's also an outdoor trail, but perhaps it's not enough space to accommodate social distancing between parties and scare actors. On the other coast, the group Witches Brew LA is starting a Ghosts of the Past outdoor dining slash haunt experience. They have partnered with various historic and reportedly haunted locations in Southern California, where they will provide diners a socially distanced meal, as well as dinner theater, ooh, scary, and thematic haunt elements. In a time where haunt experiences, expos, and theme parks are closed, we wanted to create a safe and intimate outdoor dining experience that keeps the spirit of the season alive, which is Brew LA said in a press release. The restaurant and event industries have been severely impacted by the pandemic, so our goal was to expand on the offerings of our host venues and partners while adding our own spooky twist to the mix. And I know I talked about it last episode, but as far as trick-or-treating goes this year, well, LA did just announce that they are banning door-to-door trick-or-treating this year, unfortunately, and it remains to be seen what will happen in the rest of the country this year. I still think there are probably safe ways of making it happen, but people are already coming up with clever alternatives. For anyone with kids, my friend Jessica sent me this fun idea she found on Facebook. Buy your kids' favorite candy and do basically a Halloween version of an Easter egg hunt. Hide the candy in the house. Hide it, like, really well. Turn off the lights. Put on creepy music. And give your kids flashlights as they hunt for their candy. Maybe even rig a few surprises along the way or jump out and give them a startle every so often. Then once the candy has been claimed, maybe order a pizza and eat it by candlelight and watch a scary movie. Honestly, it sounds better than the past couple of Halloweens I've had as an adult. There are ways of keeping the spooky joy alive this year. It may take a little extra effort and a little creativity, but ultimately, the spirit of Halloween will only stay away if you keep it away. This story is from David in Dallas, Texas. Charlie. I took a 9 to 10 week motorcycle trip alone to sort myself out after my last separation, before my divorce. I didn't want people to know where I was because I didn't want people demanding my time. Best stress-free trip of my life. I stopped in Pipestone, Minnesota, and stayed at the historic Calumet Inn, established in 1888. It's known to be haunted by a number of ghosts, including the ghost of Charlie, who reportedly haunts room 308. I didn't get one of the known haunted rooms when I checked in, so I decided maybe the next day I would ask to change rooms. After a long and wonderful day with my aunt, her brother, her sister, and my uncle who lived in town, I returned to the hotel. When I walked into my room, none of the lights worked. I pushed the door open, and somebody immediately slammed it shut on me. When I opened it a second time and walked in, it felt like I was walking through ice water, as every hair on my body stood on end. Then the lights went on. Awesome. The second night was fascinating on several levels. First, I moved my stuff to room 308, the room where Charlie died, and then made my way to the gym. Every time I walked into that room, I felt energy and my hair stood on end. Because of the previous night's events, when I returned from the gym, I opened the door and then got my phone ready to record anything unusual. As I started to take my first step, the door began to close. I didn't go back in. I went across the street to the museum to learn about Charlie. I learned his real name was Christian E. Hirschberger, and he ultimately met his doom on Valentine's Night in 1944. A fire had broken out in the hotel. The fire had started in the kitchen, and all occupants of the hotel were able to make it out safely, except Charles, who was not quick enough and died of smoke inhalation. I returned to room 308, which had been decorated with spooky stuff by my family in town. Hilarious. But the real story is in the motion-activated trail camera that a friend had set up in my room. As I looked through the pictures from that camera, I saw that it was activated when I first returned, and then activated again while I was out of the room. There are three pictures taken in the pitch dark, apparently activated by motion, while I was out with my family. So David's story made me want to do a little further research on the Calumet Inn. I had never heard of it before reading his story. I love finding out about haunted locations that aren't necessarily the most well-known or frequent stops for ghost hunters or paranormal shows. The Calumet Inn is a 137-year-old three-story hotel built out of pink jasper quartzite, and it almost looks like a section of a castle was plopped down in the middle of Pipestone, Minnesota. Its first floor has been home to a bank, as well as a 14-hole miniature golf course. I was surprised to learn that the fire in David's story was not the only fire to affect the Calumet Inn. The original hotel was built in 1883, but there was a fire in 1886 that burnt it down, killing one and fatally injuring two other men. The man killed that night was Reverend Alfred Studdard Orcutt, who reportedly made sure everyone else made it out of the hotel safely before the building collapsed on him. This fire made the town realize how unprepared they were to fight fires, and almost immediately they started building a firefighting infrastructure in the town. The new hotel that sprang up in its place opened in 1888 on Thanksgiving Day, and in 1917, a fourth floor was added, bringing the total number of hotel rooms to 90. It became the premier hotel of Pipestone, as Pipestone was the epicenter of four major railroad lines. Everything was going swimmingly until the Valentine's Day fire, which killed Charles Hershberger. But thanks to the fire of 1886, there were actually firefighters this time, which most likely saved a majority of the occupants and most of the building. Eventually, as train travel became less popular, visitors to the hotel became less frequent, and less care was given to the hotel. In 1978, it was in such a state of disarray that the fire marshal ended up closing it down until it was purchased and renovated the following year, eventually reopening in 1981 as the hotel it is today. Artwork and murals now fill the rooms, and while much of the inn was changed, the staircases and lobby remained essentially untouched. And naturally, that is where many of the hotel's hauntings are said to occur. If you go to the front desk of the Calumet Inn and look for the creepy doll in a white dress, you'll find a binder about 3 inches thick. Unless you're Leslie Knope, you'll probably ignore the binder, unless you knew what it was. It's a binder full of an exhaustive list of all the paranormal experiences people have had while staying at the hotel. Most of the entries do have to do with Charlie and the room he haunts in 308. Charlie is known to turn the lights on and off, as David experienced in his story. He also turns on the TV, probably to catch Grey's Anatomy. Housekeeping reports that things will be moved about the room as they're cleaning, and Charlie is also known to make phones ring, slam the toilet lid, write in dust, give people gentle pushes, and even appear in mirrors. Many occupants of 308 will claim to sense him leaning in the doorway, watching them. Some people claim to see a well-dressed man in period garb sitting calmly in the hotel's unchanged lobby until approached, at which point he will somehow vanish. Could this be the hotel's other fire victim, Reverend Orcutt? Another often seen vanishing specter is that of a woman who meanders the hallways of the hotel, wearing a bright red dress, who will disappear out of view. All sorts of stories can be read in this binder full of ghosts. A girl, Cassie, writes how she was babysitting her little brother one night, only to have a door in the room slam, which promptly made her pee her pants and call the police. The front desk will often get phone calls from the room 207. They'll answer, and it's someone requesting a toothbrush or something else they may have forgotten to bring with them. Not unusual, as 207 is often occupied, but what is unusual is when the items will be brought up only to find 207 locked and unoccupied. Phantom piano music is often heard wafting through the corridors of the hotel, sometimes seemingly coming from the unoccupied dining room where the piano is located, and sometimes seemingly coming from nowhere at all. If you ever find yourself in quiet Pipestone, Minnesota, a native Swee town full of rich history and spirits, make sure to visit the Calumet Inn and peruse its binder full of ghosts. The town and hotel are not overrun by visitors because of the town's remote nature, so it's no wonder spirits feel they have free rein of the inn. Sometimes I think we miss paranormal happenings when there's too much everyday energy or people surrounding us. We can see something abnormal, but quickly dismiss it because there's so much going on. But it's the quiet places where the bumps in the night are the loudest. I've got another story for you here. If you were listening to the very first story of this episode and it seemed familiar, that's because it was published online in Jezebel a few years ago. But I wanted to include it because A, it's such a great story, and B, it was sent to me by Nicole, who is the sister of the woman from our first story. And Nicole has a story of her own. Her story also takes place in the same California resort town. So here it is. Arguing. In 2007, my ex and I got married. I rushed into it after leaving a super oppressive religion, and he turned out to be an abusive alcoholic. My parents were living in a resort town in the Southern California mountains. That whole mountain creeps me out for multiple reasons. My parents died in a murder-suicide there committed by my father. Also, my father was closely tied to the Church of Scientology. He wasn't part of the church, but he did work for them. And supposedly, Miscavige's wife has been seen there. My father hinted at this too, but he had signed so many non-disclosure agreements he was extremely quiet about anything to do with them. Anyway, my ex and I weren't sure where we wanted to live permanently yet, so we were looking for something small and cheap. I found a place on Craigslist. It was a two-story house that was divided into two units. The house was on what I call the dark side of the mountain. Basically, that whole area barely got any sun. We were getting the bottom level. When the owner of the house met us to sign the lease and do the walkthrough, she told us that another couple lived upstairs. She also mentioned that the heater in the main bedroom should never be turned on. Ever. Because it was old and would leak carbon monoxide. Duly noted. My ex and I moved in immediately after getting married. Around 2 weeks into living there, we still hadn't seen any signs of our upstairs neighbors. One night, we were sound asleep when I woke up around 3 a.m. to the heater in our room blasting. This made absolutely no sense because someone would have had to physically turn it on. I woke my ex and he said there was no way he would have turned it on. We turned off the heater and while unnerved, we were somehow able to let it slip from our minds. But then the arguing started. Loud, intense yelling between two people upstairs. We'd be watching TV in the evening and have to turn it all the way up to drown it out. But still, we had no actual physical sightings of the couple that lived above us. One day, we came home from the grocery store, and there was a car in our driveway, and a couple loading their belongings into it. I immediately recognized the woman. She was my mom's massage therapist. She recognized me too, and we chatted for a brief moment, before telling me they'd really like to talk to us for a minute. We say, sure. She then proceeds to tell us that they are moving out today, and that they'd strongly advise us to move ASAP. She says they believe the place is haunted, that within weeks of moving in, they had started arguing all the time, which was way out of the norm for them, that they had been seeing weird shadows and hearing strange noises. The husband said he knew it sounded crazy and that he's a total skeptic, but that about a month ago, they had just come home with their new baby, and he had gotten so angry at his wife that he had to go stay at a motel because he was afraid he'd hurt her and the baby. He said that's when they decided to leave, and they had been staying somewhere else ever since. I'm like, what? And told them we had been hearing arguing upstairs. They say there was no possibility that it was them at all. They had been gone for a month. Then the wife says her aunt is an FBI psychic in New York, and that she had gotten a call from her. Her aunt told her that she had a sense something was very wrong with the house and to get out. She also said she'd spoken to a former tenant who supposedly told her living in that house had caused her divorce. Our neighbors kept packing, and we went to unload our groceries, and they left later that day. I, of course, freak out. My ex tells me it's silly, that they're obviously full of crap. We'll be fine. Later that night, I go take a bath just to be alone. Well, I'm in the tub for about 10 minutes when I hear loud stomping noises above my head. I mean loud, like someone dropped a grand piano. I jump up, grab my towel, and run to the living room. My ex is standing there looking up in disbelief. He says it must be the neighbors back to get something. He grabs a flashlight, and I follow him outside. We walk up the stairs and look inside, but can't see anything. The sliding glass door is unlocked, so cautiously, we go in. But it's dark, and no one is there. It looked like someone had been doing some kind of cleansing ritual in the recent past, but no sign of any humans or animals whatsoever. We left that night and only came back to get our stuff because I refused to spend another night there. So as I said before, there are no rules here on October State of Mind. For the first two episodes, I ended the podcast talking about scary movies. For this one, I'm not going to. Why? Mostly because the episode is already an hour long, and that's the time that I'm aiming for as an hour, and I've never quite made it, but we're going to try to keep it as close to that as possible. And a movie review usually takes a little longer than I mean it to. So I'm not going to do it today. Besides, you got two scary movies for the price of one last episode, so don't complain. What I will end the episode with are a couple of recommendations. One is Lovecraft Country on HBO. It's been a fantastic new addition to my weekly lineup of TV. It's a series set in the 1950s Jim Crow era America, and we follow a young black man, Atticus Freeman, and his friend Letitia Adam and Uncle George as they travel to find his missing father. If you know anything about H.P. Lovecraft, he was known for his horrific monster creations in his literature. And these monsters come to life on the show alongside the real-life monsters that are the racist and hate-filled white people in America. It's a scary, exciting, thrilling, and powerful series that I'm sure is going to rack up some Emmy noms when the time comes. Also, for any of you gamers out there, I wanted to send you a recommendation for a game that would basically be October State of Mind if October State of Mind were a video game. It was released in 2017, and it's called Night in the Woods, and it's available on most gaming platforms. The story is as follows. College dropout May Borowski returns home to the crumbling former mining town of Possum Springs, seeking to resume her aimless former life and reconnect with the friends she left behind. But things aren't the same. Home seems different now, and her friends have grown and changed. Leaves are falling, and the wind is growing colder. Strange things are happening as the light fades. And there's something in the woods. It's also worth noting that May, your character, is a cat, and the whole town is filled with anthropomorphic animals. And while the actual gameplay itself isn't super exciting, it's really more of a story game. There's a couple mini-games occasionally, but mostly you just walk around the town and go in buildings and point and click and read dialogue. But the dialogue is super fun and relatable, and the story is really investing. The town is getting ready for its fall harvest festival, so naturally the aesthetic of the game has leaves falling and those beautiful copper, yellow, red tones with some cool blues mixed in. Oh, and I love the music for it. I was just listening to it on Spotify, actually. It's like this really relaxing ambient synth music that ranges from melancholic to uplifting, and then it's exciting when it needs to be. There's also, naturally, a ghost story and some bizarre dreams you play through. What I really didn't expect from the game was how emotionally impacted I was from it, especially at the end. It left me in a surprisingly vulnerable place. It addresses mental illness in a way I had never experienced in a video game before, and honestly, it kind of messed me up, but in a good way. I thought when I finished it a year or so ago that it was the kind of game that you only play through once, but now I'm getting an itch to play again as the days grow shorter and colder and the promise of true fall is on the horizon. It's the perfect autumn mood enhancer. Well, that's all I got, folks. That's it for episode 3. Did you have fun? I know I did. Honestly, I did. This podcast has given me a sense of purpose during all of this. If you're enjoying listening, make sure to subscribe and rate 5 stars wherever it is you're listening to this podcast. Also, if you're wondering what the release schedule is for this podcast, it's whatever I want it to be. Right now, it's kind of bi-monthly with no specific day of the week to release. I think I'm aiming for Wednesdays. So the best way to stay up to date is to subscribe. And if you're mad I didn't talk about a scary movie, if you've come to expect that as a longtime listener of all the past 2 episodes, don't give me a lower rating. Just let me know. Shoot me an email. I'll be like, Ricky, I wanted a scary movie. And I'll be like, okay, I'll do it probably next time. You can also follow along at OSOM Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. That's Awesome Podcast. And you can follow me personally at Ricky A. Schroeder on all of those as well. Make sure to email me your creepy true stories and poems to RickyOSOM@gmail.com. And tell your friends and family to listen. Anyone who likes spookiness, anyone who likes fall, October, ghosts, Halloween, tell them to listen to this podcast. Congrats to everyone on making it to the start of spooky season. Tell me how you're celebrating Halloween and autumn this year. Well, until our next adventure, sleep tight, don't look under the bed, and happy hauntings.